All right, thanks so much for listening to Third String Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Zach Crippen. The other host for this episode, at least, is traveling. He's on the road right now. He's literally driving in a car as he travels from his home in North Dakota, his old home in North Dakota, to his new home in Las Vegas, home of the Golden Knights, current Stanley Cup contestants. That's an exciting series. We don't really talk about it this episode, but we'll talk about it soon. This is a micropod. It is Road Trip Diaries number one. Because Pete is on the road, we're going to do these until he gets to Las Vegas, basically. These tiny little daily segments where we talk about some of the stories from around the web in the sports world. This one's a fun one, and tomorrow's going to be a fun one as well. We have some topics planned for that. So hopefully you enjoy that. It's casual. It's fun. If you have questions for Pete about anything on his road trip, or you have questions for us about what's going on in sports, shoot us a note at Third String Pod, at Zach Crippen, at Pete underscore Laclede. But without further ado, the man, the myth, the legend, Pete Laclede. Pete, you are on the road from your home in North Dakota to Las Vegas. I think you're stopping in Billings, Montana tonight. Give me the highlights. What's the trip been like so far? What do you do on the road to entertain yourself? What is worth seeing between the middle of nowhere in North Dakota and Billings, Montana? Give us the highlights.
Well, first and foremost, has to be in beautiful Williston, North Dakota, is what we found out today is the boyhood home of Phil Jackson. That was pretty exciting to be driving through beautiful Williston, which is a one of those cities right in the heart of oil country up there in North Dakota. So everywhere you look, it's oil rigs, big trucks, all sorts of stuff. And my daughter calls out while we're playing a game of I Spy. I spy with my little eye a basketball, which kind of took me by surprise. But I look up and no kidding, there is Phil Jackson's face with him holding the basketball on what I looked and then saw on a street sign was Phil Jackson Way, also known as the Dakota Parkway. That was pretty fun to see. And boy, something I did not know.
Yeah, who would have thought?
But yeah,
Phil Jackson, a true Williston son.
Yeah, that's the last major city I've seen. That was about 5 hours ago.
And by major city, we need to clarify what you mean by major city, because I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for Williston, North Dakota. I see a total population of 14,716 in the 2010 census. So,
I mean, it's got more than one gas station, and I think I saw two subways as we were driving through. So that's the big time, my man. That's the big time.
Okay. Oh, well, and to be fair, I quoted the 2010 census numbers. Looks like the North Dakota oil boom has caused a big increase. So looks like in 2015, it had like 27,000 people. That's crazy, actually. Doubled in size,
yeah,
man.
That is like the heart of not only oil country, but also fracking. So it's very interesting driving through there, because it's all temporary housing that they built for the oil workers. A lot of hotels. Everyone's driving a huge truck. We stopped at Subway, and the line was like 35 minutes to get a sandwich. It was just the city, even today, cannot handle how many people have come in with the oil boom. And the oil's really moved west in North Dakota, which has been interesting. I'm coming out of Minot, where the oil used to be and is not anymore. And it's very interesting, kind of the shell that was left in that city. So it's been interesting, but honestly, it's a beautiful road trip. I'm in the heart of Montana right now, and I mean, I can probably see for 50 miles right now. I can see some rainstorms, but I can see just forever. It's truly impressive. Montana is not a city I've ever been to. We'll get to Yellowstone here in the next couple of days. So look at this. I'm passing Rosebud, Montana, for any Citizen Kane fans. There's a city I didn't know existed.
Rosebud, Montana. Wow. I didn't know that existed either.
Yeah. Looks like about a population of 19 if I was a betting man.
Yeah, I'm looking it up on Google for you right now. Looks like you could, if you're hungry for a bite or a drink, you could stop off at the Longhorn Bar. It has a rating of 4.6 stars on Google, 17 reviews. That's the place to be.
I should have stopped.
I guess you've got the kids with you, though. Probably not a great setup for stopping at the Longhorn Bar.
We've got the two kids, and I mean, we've talked about my dog Beamer on the show as well. So he's sitting in the back seat and looking at me like I'm crazy right now. And we're just living the great American road trip life. Not
cool.
A bad way to spend a day in June.
So what's your itinerary? You're going to get to Billings, Montana tonight, and then you're going to Yellowstone tomorrow, and then what, on to Utah and Vegas from there?
We'll stop in Salt Lake City as well, and then we'll be in Vegas by the weekend. So it should be a fun couple days for us.
Wow. Now, you're going to Vegas, obviously, where sports betting is legal. What's your first bet going to be? You going to bet on the Caps?
Well, I should have put the bet down when they were down 2-0 to the Columbus Blue Jackets, and I might have gone on record via text to my entire family saying it's time to look at firing Gary Trotz, which,
oh,
standard,
boy.
Boy, do I look like an idiot now.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, I wish I'd gotten in on the Caps game a lot earlier, but I think if I'm starting to bet, I think I got to start reasonably looking at the Atlanta Braves to, at the very least, make a wild card push here out of the NL East, which I went back and listened to one of our preview shows. We did not give the Braves a whole lot of love when we did our NL East preview.
Pete, I will say this. It is a long season, and we have a long way to go. I think the Nats are
going
to climb.
Is.
I mean, the Phillies have already started to regress. They were just swept by the San Francisco Giants. The San Francisco Giants, who are still under 500 despite the three-game sweep. So I think we have a long way to go before we say the Braves are actually going to get a wild card. I think the Cardinals, who you mentioned in our season preview, are lurking steadily, the Brewers as well. The Cubs, you know, if the Cardinals or Brewers don't win the Central, the Cubs will. And so, yeah, I think we're a long way from the Braves really making a legitimate wild card push, but you're right, they're off to a hot start. Ozzie Albies, though, has definitely had a cooler last 30 games in his first 30, and then Acuña out with an injury. So I think we'll see what happens. We could see some regression to the mean on the Braves.
So let me ask you, because obviously I've been alone with my thoughts a little when I don't have the kids in the car as we are caravanning through the northern tier here. Listened to a lot of MLB radio and heard an interesting quote from Jake Arrieta about the success or lack thereof of the shift in Philadelphia right now. So obviously we're seeing more teams than ever this year really putting on the shift, where we thought that it had kind of balanced out in the 15, 16, 17 seasons. It appears that it's up again. Jake Arrieta is talking about how the shift is not working in Philadelphia. Is this a overcompensation in the Gabe Kapler, Moneyball, all statistics-driven era, or are guys just getting smarter in how they approach and at bat when the shift is on and figuring out ways to beat it? What are you thinking these days? Because Jake Arrieta is hot.
Yeah,
he doesn't come out against his team very often.
Well, generally, anytime you're your team's number one starter and you get lit up because batters are just hitting successfully against the shift, you're just not going to be happy that that there's no one on the left side of the infield, and that's why somebody got a base hit when it would have been a double play. I think it's both those things you mentioned. I think there's one, an overcompensation towards analytics, right? This is the shift is something that we thought we might have reached equilibrium, but I think we're still sort of seeing baseball figure out where it makes the most sense in terms of quantity of employment. And then the second is, because we are seeing it employed more, the natural thing we're going to see is hitters practicing and getting better at beating the shift. And I think we're seeing both of those things. And then the game against the Giants that Arrieta was mad about. I mean, these things are going to happen, right? You could also have the games where the shift works every single time and you do an extreme shift on Joey Gallo and he just hits it right to a guy who's standing, right in front of second base because that's the way the shift worked. So for every time that the shift's not going to work out, there's going to be around one time that it does work out. And I think Arrieta just needs to cool off and relax. He got a loss, but it's not the end of the season for him.
So let me ask you this, with Kim coming out to say this. And honestly, I don't feel like Jake Arrieta talks that much to the media. Do you think Gabe Kapler still has control of that locker room? I mean, he's such a young guy, such a dramatic first 2 weeks, I'd say, as the skipper in Philadelphia. Do you think he's got that locker room, and do you think he's still kind of our number one guy on the hot seat like we were talking about 2 months ago at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if you could say he's lost control of the locker room if it's not clear that he ever had control of the locker room in the first place. So
yeah,
I think that'd be the first thing I'd say. I just think it's early to tell. I think he is somebody who has such high energy and such a different way of doing things than his predecessor that they're going to give him a pretty long leash. And I think that's what we were saying at the beginning of the season too, especially when he had that whole fiasco where he called in a relief pitcher without the relief pitcher actually warming up. He had Hobie Milner come in, and Milner hadn't even thrown a warm-up pitch in the bullpen. So, he'll have gaffes like that. He'll probably continue to do that. But he's been kind of vindicated in the eyes of some, at least, because the Phillies have been, off to a great start and until recently second behind the Braves in the division. So, actually, as recently as a week ago, they had sole possession of first place in the East, and obviously they've kind of fell off from there. But yeah, I think he has a pretty long leash. I think we wouldn't see any personnel change at the manager position until at least the end of the season. I think they'll let him see the season through. But Pete, I've got to go get to work on dinner here. I've got a few questions for you, though, real quick. So
a lot
going on in the sports world. I know you're on the road in North Dakota. You probably don't have great cell reception up there. Probably relatively unplugged from the sports world. Terrell Owens, though, was in a tweet. He tweeted at GM, the GM of the Niners, John Lynch. He told them that he needed to get a really electric receiver out on the field, and T.O. said that he was available if Lynch needed him. So do you think this is all a publicity stunt, or do you think Terrell Owens is actually serious about getting out on the football field?
I'm leaning towards publicity stunt, but it wouldn't surprise me if Terrell Owens tries to find his way into the 49ers organization, maybe as an advisor, maybe some kind of assistant wide receivers coach. It's been so interesting after you turned me onto the Amazon show All In, where it's talking about the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah.
Just watching the drama around Dez Bryant. Obviously, he's not in Dallas anymore, but watching the way the wide receivers coaches attempted to handle him, I think it becomes very, very clear that you need a personality in charge of your wide receivers. And to be honest, off the top of my head, I don't know who in San Francisco is the 49ers coach, but that is such a young organization, and it's trending in such the right direction between Jimmy Garoppolo, between Kyle Shanahan. I mean, I actually think it would be a smart move if he can, you know, get his ego through the front door of the 49ers organization to have a guy like that in the organization. What do you think? Is this for real?
No, it's not for real. First of all, it would never happen even if Terrell thought it was for real. But second, no, there's no way this guy can think it's realistic that he gets out on the football field. I mean, he sees guys like Dez Bryant who hit their early 30s and are all of a sudden, you know, they just lose half a step and that's kind of it, right? They're not impact players anymore. And Terrell Owens, it's a nice thought. He was super fun to watch when he played, but there's no way he thinks this is real. It's definitely just a publicity stunt. This is all in good fun. Like you, I think he could have a front office role eventually, but we'll have to see if that happens, but this is not for real. I have another question for you, though, and actually it's related to the Amazon show you mentioned. So we've both been watching this All or Nothing Dallas Cowboys season. Super unimpressed with the Dallas Cowboys organization. That's a conversation for another time, I think. But my question for you, I know you're a long-suffering Redskins fan, very frustrated by a lot of the moves that Bruce Allen makes. Would you do a straight-up trade, Bruce Allen for Jerry Jones?
Yeah, I would.
Okay.
I would, to be honest. So let me tell you the thing I don't like about Jerry Jones from this show that I have figured out, and then I'll tell you what I do like. I don't like that Jerry Jones sits in on every coach's meeting, it seems. Obviously, he's not in the wide receivers room or the running backs room, but every meeting that Jason Garrett is supposedly leading, Jerry Jones is talking.
Yep.
And I know that they are editing film to show specific stuff, but Jerry, I can't imagine most GMs are that involved in the day-to-day operations. Obviously, they are scouting talent. They're working with the coaching staff. They're doing all this kind of stuff. But Jerry Jones is asking questions about, like, field level decisions in the game about why guys are doing certain things. But that is not the role of a general manager in any sport, unless
right.
he's a general manager slash head coach.
Yeah, you know, I think the problem is that
like
Jerry
that.
Jones is both the general manager and the owner. So there's not a clear delineation of jobs. In almost any other organization, you have the owner of the team who is responsible for making sure the team remains financially solvent and profitable. You have the president of the team who's responsible for basically everything administrative and a lot of the league team interaction. You have the GM, who's the personnel guy. You have the coach, who's doing the on-field. And all of those things work together, but the roles are clearly delineated and demarcated. And in the Dallas Cowboys case, first of all, it's all in the family, right? They're just Jones everywhere you look. And then Jerry has these two hats of owner and GM. And when you have the two roles potentially come into conflict, it's not clear which role wins out. And then he ends up bleeding into the coach territory because he has such a heavy hand in the personnel decisions. And it's kind of crazy.
Well, and doesn't it feel like every coach is almost a yes man when you ask him questions about how guys are feeling, what they were thinking? Every coach seems to tell Jerry exactly what they want to hear when the video clearly shows that is not what was happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think because he wears so many hats, and he is not only the money guy, but the personnel guy and the building guy and the franchise guy, that everyone wants to keep their jobs and keep Jerry happy.
Yeah.
So that's what I don't like. What I do like is the fact that even though the Cowboys clearly were dysfunctional in 2017, at least to where I am, I'm about six episodes in, there is still a huge buy-in to that organization that I really and truly believe starts with Jerry Jones, that I know for a fact Dan Snyder does not have in Washington. Everyone hates Bruce Allen, including the players. There's just no allegiance whatsoever, which I really do see in Dallas. And there's no way that that is coming from any of the coaching staff, from what I can tell on video. Jason Garrett is, like you've said so many times, he's a cheerleader. He's not the guy building a culture and an ethos. But I actually think a lot of that does come from Jerry the more I'm watching it.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. Pete, I've got to go, unfortunately, but let's continue the road trip diaries tomorrow. Maybe you can broadcast live on location from Salt Lake City or Yellowstone or somewhere on the way. So let's talk again tomorrow. To our listeners, hope you enjoyed this micropod. Let's wish Pete the best as he heads off to Vegas, the land of the Golden Knights. Pete, we'll talk to you soon.